Hi, this is Lisa Henderson, your host for Daring Parenting. And our guest today is Dr. Richard Schuster. He started out in IT and ended up as a clinical psychologist with a specialty in neuropsychology. Dr. Schuster is also the founder and a podcaster for thedailyhelping.com. That's thedailyhelping.com. So you can go every day and get helped with a new subject. It's all kinds of information and it's free. Now, Dr. Schuster, when we talked to him, was really helping us out with parents dealing with internet safety issues. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And I'm so glad to have you here, Richard.
Well, I'm really happy to be here, Lisa. Thank you.
I think we're all pretty familiar with the common, are our child's going to meet up with a sexual predator on the internet? If you could address that first, and then I think it would be a great idea if we branch out from there. But can you talk a little bit about what's happening? And I know you've worked with law enforcement in that regard.
Yes. Lisa, when we talk about meeting up, there's a significant difference between whether a predator will actually make a contact with a child, meaning that is there a meeting, versus are they going to attempt to solicit them on the internet. What we know is that there's a pretty large number of contacts that are made that are solicitation-type contacts, meaning that your child might be online and then somebody who is an adult with bad intentions is going to, either through instant messenger, email, social networking sites, going to make contact with your kid. And then there's other things that they do too. There are things like they'll send, you know, inappropriate pictures. We know that 1 in 5 kids that gets onto the internet is solicited with some kind of a pornographic picture. So that in itself is pretty significant.
Yeah, those statistics are, 1 in 5 is pretty sturdy.
What complicates this is that we also know, because of the nature of how the internet is reshaping our culture, in particular the culture of youth, that 3/4 of the kids that go on the internet are pretty willing to share information with strangers, information that they might not share in a face-to-face setting.
And psychologically, what's the reason behind this?
The reason is because there's a number of things that come into play. We know that the feeling of being on the internet gives you this sense of security. So what we found, in fact, there was a recent study that was just published that more and more young people in particular are using the internet to do things like break up with their significant others. And they find that you don't have, you know, the awkwardness or the pressure of doing something face-to-face. When you couple that with how the social networking sites, and certainly there's other things besides the social networking sites that can be problematic, but a social networking site by design is going to rank your kid in terms of popularity by how many online friends they have. So when you have adolescents and even younger than that that are using these sites to create new friends, to say, look how popular I am because I have 300 friends.
Right.
I don't know an 11-year-old that actually knows 300 people, much less one that has 300 friends. So, you know, when you look at it like that, they're just accustomed to these type of interactions to where, hey, it's acceptable and fine for me to make a new friend online. Where it gets dangerous is if somebody is trying to become their friend online and they're 38 years old, but they're posing as a 15-year-old, now we start getting into problems.
Yeah, and this is what I think is so true. You can hide behind so much on the internet. You
Correct.
Can lie about so much. And one of the things that I think that I understand this correctly is when a predator is making contact, they will kind of desensitize them, if you will, over a period of time. Does that sound right? Has that been your experience?
It's absolutely been my experience, Lisa. So what happens is they're going to need to establish a level of rapport with that child. So typical ways they do it are they try and find out what the interests are of the kids. And if that kid has a profile connected to their instant messenger address or a social networking site, it's usually pretty easy. These kids quite often, you know, extreme situations are where kids are going to detail everything they do, where they're going to be, you know, what their hobbies are, what time their schedules are. So a predator has really the pick of the litter to go up and down these profiles and say, okay, here's a kid. She lives in my town. She likes soccer. So now you'll start saying, hey, I like soccer, and you start talking about a common ground. And then, you know, they usually want to appeal to be this, you know, the kid wants them to seem cool. You know, that's you know, to use a term that these people are going to do, they want to become your friend. You know, maybe the girl got a C on a project and the parents want to come down. Well, the person trying to make contact is to say, you know, your parents don't really get you, but I do, and a C is just a C, and you shouldn't be punished for that. So they try and, it's very subversive, where they try and establish this rapport by making themselves sense, like the guilty pleasure, you know, don't tell anybody we're talking, but then the kids feel important because they've got this special friend, and it's really secretive, and it's alluring to them. The other thing that compounds that is we know that after about the eighth grade, greater than half of kids that go online will not share what they talked about with their parents. Now, these are not kids that are delinquent. These are kids across the board.
Wait a minute. I don't understand.
What I mean by that is that once you cross that eighth grade threshold, predominantly the things that the kids do on the internet, meaning conversations they have, activities they partake in, they are hesitant to share that information with their parents.
Gotcha. Oh, that is so true. Mm-hmm. That is so... I had asked my daughter, I was like, let me see your Facebook. And she was like, let me check first, make sure it's okay. And then my son's 13 and a couple of her friends, they're older, were looking at his and they're like, oh, it's a baby Facebook. Like it's real innocent and real sweet and all that. And so what I told them is do not ever put anything in print you do not want your parents and every single parent you know to read.
Well, you touched on something that's really important because once you put it out on the internet, you're not getting it back. And what kids don't realize today, especially those that are teenagers and that might be in high school and pretty close to where they're going to start looking at colleges, is that increasingly we're finding colleges are using social networking sites as an admissions criterion. It may be kind of a great thing that, because it's subjective. So you don't know if the admissions officer at your particular school has had a bad day or what they consider offensive or what they don't. But reality is it's becoming harder and harder to get into college or get jobs. Mm-hmm. And if child A has a social networking site and maybe in their top five people is a friend and they're 18, but they've got a bottle of beer that they're holding up in their hand, and right, applicant B doesn't have a social networking site at all, it's conceivable, all things being equal, that your kid might not get into that college.
Well, and I think today it's gotten so competitive, they've got to have some way to level the playing field for these kids.
And whether it's ethical or appropriate or not for that to be used is certainly a debate for another time. But the reality is there's no standardized way of saying, well, what is acceptable social networking site content and what isn't for each institution to make that determination. What we do know is that they're using it. So, you know, to err on the side of caution, you know, it's better to have, you know, no social networking site, then have a social networking site. And if you are going to have one, certainly make sure that the information you're presenting to the world is something that you wouldn't mind if your grandmother or mother would see.
Exactly.
That's the rule of thumb.
Well, I know of a situation where the roommate assignment time came and someone looked on their roommate assignment and this girl seemed a little wild, called the director of housing and said, I don't want this person for my roommate based on their social networking site.
And there's other implications in that. Certainly in a college environment, that's something that can happen. But in a high school environment, we're seeing where, again, you know, the competitiveness is so intense now that you need to have some kind of extracurricular activity. So, you know, kids that are in cheerleading or band, there are schools that are saying, if you have anything on these social networking sites that shows you in school colors, school logo, and you're doing something inappropriate, we now have the grounds to take action against you, be it suspending you, kicking you off of that team or club. And again, these are things that kids aren't really thinking about and certainly issues that weren't there 5-10 years ago, but they're there now and they're real.
My son came down to make a YouTube video. He's a budding musician. He had on his school uniform. I said, you've got to pull that thing down. That has your school uniform on it. Anybody now all over the world can see who you are, what you look like, and that's... So he went up and changed and took that one down, but it never even crossed his mind. And I think this is the dangerous thing with the internet is, and it's just like any risky behaviors that teenagers do, they don't think it all the way through. they don't think, I'm putting this information out there, this could come back to haunt me in 5 years, 10 years, 5 minutes.
And it often does. Most often what we're seeing is because of the fact that everybody's on it and we're in this integrated world digitally, meaning that now you have the ability to take your social networking site on your cell phone. These kids are having the ability to take that information everywhere, be it in the classroom, you know, so you have, you know, issues of cheating, but certainly outside where, again, we kind of talked about how come some kids are more prone to do things on the internet than in person.
Right.
It's becoming a part of who they are to the point where we're now seeing a large number of kids that are really lacking in social skills that have more of an ability to communicate, or they feel more comfortable communicating over the internet than they do in person. And in the real world, that is certainly going to be damaging for them.
Well, and this text messaging thing, I get so irritated. I'm like, pick up the damn phone. You know, what is this?
It's totally accepted for them. And because it's accepted, things that were always an issue in the hallways in the classroom have now translated themselves to the internet. For example, rivalries. If there are friendships that now no longer are friendships, they now, you know, somebody likes a girl and the girl spurns that young man. Mm-hmm. And now instead of, you know, you tell your friends, oh, this girl is a jerk and I don't like her, now you've taken it to the internet to where somebody who's reasonably tech savvy will get into the area of cyberbullying. And this is something that's becoming increasingly dangerous. And parents are very focused on the internet predation, which is important, but the cyberbullying is something that happens because it's actually likelier, because you're likelier to have a problem with somebody who's in your kid's circle, somebody in their school, somebody down the street necessarily, than a sexual predator. And cyberbullying is basically using any type of digital technology to harass somebody else.
And it doesn't have to be bullying like we'd think about it, like, you no good, I can beat you up. It can be spreading gossip, spreading rumors, that sort of thing.
And what often happens is it takes that to a whole nother level. A great example was, you know, a situation similar to what I talked about where, you know, there was a girl that broke up with a boyfriend, and for revenge, the boyfriend took a picture of her and used photo software, Photoshop, I believe it was, to modify that image and basically take her head and put it on the body of a naked girl. And then that got put on the internet and was all over the school. And what we certainly know psychologically, you know, the teenage angst and the things, the fears that these teenagers have has a lot more to do with how they think others perceive them than what's actually going on in reality. So, you know, you've seen kids that have committed suicide or certainly attempted to, mm-hmm, as a result of some of the cyberbullying.
And the thing that I find just so uncanny, and this is goes back to that teenage not being able to think, is that the kids will not just shut off the computer. They will continue to engage and defend in the cyberbullying arena, so to speak.
And that's right, Lisa. That's in part to, I'm on the internet and I'm safe. You know, somebody who's 4'5" and is 110 pounds soaking wet has this air of invincibility on the internet. But still, those consequences are very much real as what can be the end result of that. And it often does escalate, and it often ends badly.
So as parents, what are some of the safeguards we can take? I think we all know that we're supposed to put the computer in a common room and not have the child be able to shut a door and go in a separate room. What are some of the other things that you recommend?
Well, the reality is, when you're putting a computer anywhere but a common area, there is an air of security that you're losing. You know, certainly parents believe that, oh, if my kid's, he's at home and he's on his computer and he's not out, you know, doing drugs. If you're walking by the computer and you'll see the kid hit the button and minimize the screen really quick or try, mm-hmm, and go to a different website, that's a pretty good indicator that there's something that they're doing that they know that if you saw it, you probably wouldn't be happy about it.
That applies to adults, too.
Yeah, it certainly does. And I'm sure there's a lot of employers who would appreciate that as well. But certainly, is your kid a good student and then, you know, an outgoing person, and then something happens and they become a little bit more apathetic, or they become more inwardly drawn? Have their eating patterns changed? Are they sleeping more? Do they seem like that level of energy is decreased? That's a sign that something may definitely be going on.
So basic same signs we would look for in depression.
Absolutely. Because what you're going to find is these internet sites and the internet identity that these kids have is so closely linked to them, to what their real-world identity is, that anything that will damage one is seen as damaging to the other.
Would we also look for this, the minute you get home from school, running to the computer or trying to race through homework so you can get to the computer?
That's something that happens a lot. We'll find that they'll get home from school at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and they'll get on a social networking site, and they'll have 5 chat windows open, and they'll be on it until a parent says it's time to go to bed or actually unplugs it or turns it off. That leads to addictive type behavior. So the psychologists, mental health professionals rather, use the DSM, which is the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, to diagnose mental illness.
Right.
And this thing, the latest incarnation of this was written back in 2000. So there is not anything specific to internet addiction in the current edition. However, there's been a lot of talk about the new version that's coming out in the next number of years, revision number 5, will include internet addiction. So again, this is kind of a chicken and the egg thing. Is it a real disease? Is it a real disorder? Well, the Bible, so to speak, that mental health professionals use today says no, but in a number of years, it likely will.
Well, yeah. I mean, the same with alcoholism 50 years ago wasn't considered a disease. So, and I think, too, one of the things you can see is when you take this computer away from the child who's addicted, you see all the same patterns of behavior that you see with withdrawal. Irritability, depression. My son got hooked as a young child on one of those online gaming sites. Mm-hmm. And his little character got killed off. This is awful. I mean, the child was distraught beyond belief. I said, that's it. We're unplugging the computer. You're done. And he went into withdrawal for a few days. Very, very irritable and very upset.
I mean, they're researching, do kids that lose their characters online go through a mourning process? Mm-hmm. And anecdotally, I would say that they do. You certainly are seeing that, and again, the online gaming kind of taps into a different realm. But, again, it's a part of, they really see it as, I am a 17-year-old, and there is no distinction in many respects for them other than they might be a little more reckless online, but that's who they are. Their social networking site, that's who they want the world to see them as, and that's who they believe that they are.
And then they begin to lose a sense of true self, right?
It becomes much grayer to them, that there's, it's in a way that the two become very muddied. And, to take away one, like you said, you took your kid's character died off, he became, very upset. Take away a computer from a kid that spends 4 hours on a social networking site every day, that kid is going to lash out probably in anger because you've taken away a part of what they perceive as their core identity.
Oh, so not only have you taken away the thing that they possibly are addicted to, you've also taken away their sort of role.
Correct.
In the world. I noticed that when this happened with my son, his grades dropped tremendously. And it wasn't that he was studying any less, but I think his brain wasn't processing properly. And I wonder what some of the statistics, or if there are any that show, how does it affect the brain and learning to be inundated with all of this cold medium, so to speak?
There are studies that are attempting to link ADD and ADHD to a bombarding of visual stimuli. There are some people that say that it's very impactful, and then there's other research that says, no, if it's kept within moderation and there's a balance, that it can be okay. I think you really have to just know your kid, and it's just very different for every individual. If your kid is, like you said, maybe outwardly it appears that they're paying attention or that they really are attempting to do their homework in a diligent manner. But the reality is, I got to get this stuff done so I can get online
right
with my friends.
Yeah.
That's something that they might not be verbally expressing, but it'll certainly come out in their work.
This is Lisa Henderson, your host for Daring Parenting, and we've been talking to Dr. Richard Schuster about internet safety. And the next story that we're going to hear is one that makes you think that parents should be snooping on their kids. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Richard Schuster of thedailyhelping.com on Daring Parenting. Welcome back to Daring Parenting. I'm Lisa Henderson, your host, and we've been talking to Dr. Richard Schuster, who's a clinical psychologist and the founder of thedailyhelping.com. Podcasts galore, and they're all free. Thedailyhelping.com. All right, so Richard, we were actually talking about, when is it okay for parents to snoop?
We talked about cyberbullying. A great example I have of this was there was a parent that came to me a number of years ago and said, something's going on with my kid. She's not the same. Her grades are suffering. She is not interested in anything that she used to do. And she installed that software on her computer. What we found out was that there was a boy in her high school who was a drug dealer that very much was interested in her. And she wanted nothing to do with him. She was a good girl. You know, she was an honor student up until that point. I had really good friends. And, you know, she was afraid to tell this boy no, because he was the scary drug dealer that, you know, had a nasty reputation at the school and certainly wasn't going to tell her parents.
Right.
So, you know, but she would tell her friends, and the friends really didn't have a good solution. What ended up happening, Lisa, is that the software, because it took the screenshots, because it categorized and organized and recorded those chat logs, is the parent printed those chat logs, walked into her high school and handed them to the guidance counselor, who handed them to the principal, who handed them to the undercover police officer that worked in the school. And they searched that kid that day. And on him, he had crystal meth, he had cocaine, he had a number of things, and he went to jail.
Wow.
So because of that, the stressor in that girl's life was removed. And it was a night and day thing. She went back to being who she was. So the mother never told the girl. She never told her daughter how it happened, what happened. She just, behind the scenes, was this angelic presence that helped her daughter.
And that's what I'd like to get your opinion on also. I know there are two schools of thought. One is, you tell your kids, yes, there's software on here that will monitor every keystroke, everything you do, mm-hmm. everywhere you go, and you better know it and be aware of it. Then there's the other, which is, you basically have all the information and use it as needed. Psychologically, which school of thought do you subscribe to on this?
Well, again, it really depends on the relationship you have with your son or daughter. I have parents that are on both sides of the spectrum. I have parents that say, you know what, I've got a pretty good kid, and we trust our kid. And basically, all we want to do is have a safety net in place that says, if our kid screws up, we don't want them to screw up in a way that is going to jeopardize their future or cause them physical injury. So they will put that software on there and just simply do the keywords, periodically check it. And, you know, if things are coming up, they might say, well, let's talk about something.
I am too nosy. I'd be reading that stuff all day.
Well, we have parents on the other side of the spectrum, too, who will absolutely read every single email, every line of every chat, see every website, see how much time. So psychologically, you know, it's akin to, how would your child react if you went and read their diary? You know, that's personal information. They probably don't want you reading it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really walking that fine line, and having the talk to have with your kids is to say, we're not trying to take the internet away from you. We're not trying to keep you from having fun communicating with your friends, but talk about examples. You know, there have been countless numbers of people that have been, you know, raped and killed as a result of setting things up on social networking sites.
Mm-hmm.
So if you talk about, you've talked to a 17-year-old about a 16-year-old girl who engaged in pretty similar behaviors on their social networking site or instant messenger to what that child does, it becomes more real to them. It becomes, okay, you're really trying to help me, mom and dad. You're not trying to, you know, cramp my style and take away something that's so important to me. So it's, you really have to be able to walk that fine line, but still be ready to step in.
As parents, it's up to us, just like it is in any of these arenas, drugs, alcohol, sex, to open up a dialogue.
You need to have a dialogue.
And give concrete examples. That's what, when I talk to the children, all of them say to me, I wish my parents had given me concrete examples of why this was bad.
And Lisa, because we know that the culture of kids today, and especially adolescents, is they're not going to want to tell you anything, is that, you know, they've got their defenses up as high as can possibly be about this, about pretty much anything they're going to be doing on the internet. So it's a slow and look, son, look, daughter, this is what we're doing. We're doing this in a way that we want you to be you. We want you to express who you are. We want you to be safe. And if you begin the dialogue under those guises to say, maybe it's not such a great idea to have a picture of yourself in swimwear holding a beer in your hand, you know, that sort of thing. And I know that that's kind of an extreme, but that happens a lot. So it's starting it, and it's starting the dialogue in a way that you want them to feel like you're involved in a positive way, and to give them options, things that they can do that won't get themselves or you into trouble. Be very careful about the language that's used on it. And one of the other things, and we really haven't touched on this, Lisa, but the reality is that there's much more going on than just your kid being on the internet. There was recently a story that came out where a kid made basically a virus that he distributed, and it was
on purpose?
On purpose. What it did was it was there, and if it could happen once, it could happen on any social networking site, and it can happen again, and more dangerous than this was. And this was dangerous. What he did was he created fake banner ads that said, click here, special offer, and get a $500 gift card at Macy's. And what it did was it went to a fake site to where the kids would put in username and password. So basically, the child who created this had access to that. But let's take that a step further. What if the kid had said, you know, enter your credit card number, and, you know, that's how identity theft happens. And, you know, that's just one example. So, you know, kids do that kind of stuff without even thinking. Take that a step further. You know, we talk about what's culturally acceptable. Illegally downloading music, movies, games. This is something that kids, whether they, you know, they wouldn't walk into Target and steal a CD.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't really connect that downloading it over the internet is essentially the same thing.
Exactly.
The recording industry is suing parents. There was a landmark case that happened less than 2 months ago where a lady was found guilty of file sharing. It was 16 songs, and she lost for an amount of greater than $220,000.
Wow. Because of something her child did, or because she did?
She didn't actually know. She was using file sharing software, and some of the software, what it does is in order to let you be on the software, you have to pick a folder of media content on your own computer and allow that to be shared by others. So she wasn't even really aware that other people were downloading songs off of her computer. It's kind of like, will the IRS audit you? Maybe, maybe not. But when they come, you better have your ducks in a row.
Right.
And it's the same thing with the recording artist industry. They have gone after everyday average people in North America. And it's usually thousands and thousands of dollars per song. So it's not hard to imagine how quickly that can happen. Now, that's something that you really need to be aware of, because this is all very much connected to each other.
And parents, I'm not sure I would know if my child had downloaded a video that they shouldn't have downloaded, like that was copyright protected.
And
how
Lisa,
do I know that?
You most don't. The way that you know if it's safe content is, are you purchasing it through a site that's authorized to distribute it? So if you go to Amazon.com or Walmart.com or, you know, iTunes, places like that, these are places that have agreements in place with the major music and the movie studios to say, you know, we're selling a copy of this film, because you never own a film. You own the right to access it under a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's, if they're going to these strange sites or they're using, you know, file sharing technology, you can be assured that they don't have legal access to these things.
If they're not paying for it, it's not legitimate.
Correct.
My kids know. I feel very strongly about this. I was in radio for years, and I'm a great believer that musicians should get their royalties. And so I don't allow them to burn CDs. It's like, you can go to the store and buy it.
But what you said is very much what I've seen across the board, is I will go, and if I'm in an audience of 500 people and I say, show of hands, how many of your kids have or watch videos? You'll get greater than 95% of the people that put up their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And my next question will be, how many of you definitively know where your kid is getting their media content from and whether they obtained it through legal means? And that drops to probably less than 10% or 5% of the room.
Yeah.
And then when I share with them about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act and how it is illegal to be doing these things, and just the large dollar amounts that the parents could be liable for, Mm-hmm. You know, you see the eyes get very big very quickly, and they realize that this is more than just my kid spending time
enjoying
with their
music
friends.
And,
it can impact things. So, you know, to take this, to give what's the worst thing that can happen is, aside from the predation, which is horrific, mm-hmm. and the cyberbullying, which could lead to anything from legal consequences to suicide, we've seen in some instances, you could wake up one day if you happen to be doing online banking or QuickBooks, and if your kid has been the victim of one of the social networking site identity thefts, or they downloaded a virus inadvertently as they were getting something free they shouldn't have anyhow, you could theoretically have your social security or your bank information compromised, so somebody could get access to that.
No, don't tell me this.
You could have, you know, again, there's the identity theft component of it. You could find yourself being sued again. So it's much larger than just, okay, my kid's got a social networking site. It's much more significant than that, and that's what parents need to be aware of. And the other thing you mentioned, catching up, is that one of the frustrating things, especially in the arena of cyberbullying, is that we often find that the laws are a number of years behind what's actually going on in the world. So the United States in particular has done a pretty poor job on the whole of addressing cyberbullying compared to, say, Canada and some of our European counterparts, because there's a mindset that, you know, there's this rite of passage thing about bullying and kids need to learn to be tough and things of that nature. It's a whole different world now, and I really would urge you that if you are a parent and you start seeing the signs, you know, your kid is not going to come home with a black eye.
Right.
But the emotional scarring that can happen over the internet can be far more damaging than a left hook across his cheek. And those are the kind of things that you really need to be thinking about.
Wow. Very powerful stuff. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you so much, Richard.
My pleasure.
It was great having Dr. Richard Schuster as our guest today, talking about internet safety. And Dr. Richard Schuster is a neuropsychologist, but he is also the founder of a great website called TheDailyHelping.com. And it's a collection of podcasts that are just inspiring and ready to build you up. And they're free. So that's on thedailyhelping.com. We appreciate you listening to Daring Parenting on Hoodsprayed FM. You can catch the show twice a week, Thursday mornings from 10 to 10:30, Tuesday night, 7 to 7:30, and you can listen anytime at your convenience on daringparenting.com. On the homepage, just go to the tab that says Radio Shows. We hope you'll join us again next week. If you have questions, you can send a private message to our Facebook page, or you can email lisa@daringparenting.com. Until next time, I hope you'll be a daring parent.